Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Dew Hirsu.
With a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
But in those days, after that suffering, the sun will be darkened. And the moon will not give its light, and the stars will be falling from heaven, and the powers in the heavens will be shaken. Then they will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds with great power and glory. Then he will send out the angels and gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of the heaven. From the fig tree, learn its lesson. As soon as its branch becomes tender and puts forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. So also, when you see these things taking place, you know that he is near, at the very gates. Truly, I tell you, this generation will not pass away until all these things have taken place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. But about that day or hour, no one knows, neither the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. Beware, keep alert, for you do not know when the time will come. It is like a man going on a journey when he leaves home and puts his slaves in charge, each with his work, and commands the doorkeeper to be on the watch. Therefore, keep awake, for you do not know when the master of the house will come, in the evening or at midnight or at cockcrow or at dawn. Or else he may find you asleep when he comes suddenly. And what I say to you, I say to all, keep awake.
You heard the cry of our hearts, and you came down. Freely you gave us your love.
Preacher and theologian by the name of Fred Craddock tells a story. I heard it myself, and then I was reminded of it this week in a beautiful sermon by a man named Scott Hosey, and I want to share it with everyone today. It happened to Fred Craddock many years ago. He was driving across the country, and he had stopped, he said, at a small diner somewhere in the South for an early breakfast and coffee. He had been driving all through the dark night, and it was getting now just close to dawn. So before he got too sleepy, he decided that he better stop for a while and eat something. So he went in the diner, and as he waited in his booth for his breakfast order to come, Craddock saw another person enter the diner, an African-American man, who had taken a seat on the stool up the counter. The diner's manager then began, in front of Fred Craddock, to treat the black man with a contempt that was clearly born of very deep-seated racism. The manager was rude, and he was insulting, and he was demeaning as well to his black guest. And as he sat in his booth, just a little ways away from the counter, Fred Craddock wrestled within himself about saying something to chide the manager for his shameful and racist conduct. Eventually, the black man quickly slurped down his coffee and fled the diner, went outside and ate his breakfast on the stoop. Craddock, meanwhile, remained completely silent. This is what he says. "I didn't say anything," he confessed. "I quietly paid my bill, left the diner on the other side, and headed back to my car. But as I walked through the parking lot, somewhere in the distance, I heard a rooster crow. And with that poignant final image of the rooster crowing, Fred Craddock evoked an entire cloud of denial and betrayal and shame and regret. Now, in case you don't know, which is totally fine, by the way, the rooster's crow follows in the Bible and the story the disciple Peter's triple denial of Jesus in the last hours before Jesus' death. And this story of the cock crowing has become one of the more famous images in the Gospels. But not everybody knows about that, see? And Fred Craddock tells this story. He didn't tell it just once. He's written it and he's shared it. He also tells this story, that one Sunday he preached this sermon again. And he told that whole story you all just heard. And after worship, a man came up to him, because this is what happens sometimes after you preach, and shook his hand really vigorously. And he said, "Thank you, Pastor, for that powerful, powerful sermon. That really hit home." By the way, what was the business with the rooster? What is the business with the rooster? See, we don't all get it. We don't all get it. In the New Testament, the Greek word for cock or rooster occurs in two stories, not two times, but in two stories. One is near the end of Jesus' life, as I just said a moment ago. The other is right here in this story that you just heard Matt read for us in Mark 13:35, where the precise word for the rooster's crow is found right there. And it's interesting to me. It's okay if it's not interesting to you, but it's interesting to me because in part that reference has to do with time. Has to do with time. It's easy for us to sit here in this room and listen to stories from the Bible be read and forget that human beings have not always known how to tell time, or not at least had a precise way to do it. And crowing roosters or cock crow, when you hear it in the Bible, was one way people gauged what time of day it was. And although they are a bit unpredictable, I did a little research, roosters are remarkably consistent. I learned that they have internal clocks. They have a circadian rhythm. In biblical times, roosters generally were known to crow at 11:30 p.m., at 1:30 a.m., and then once more right before the crack of dawn. Those people back then spent a whole lot of time in the dark. It's also possible that we forget that. Before electricity, a person could have 14 hours of total darkness. And if you add a waning moon, you are really, really, really in the dark. So life was different, and people had to do things like wait for the light. We sing it, but people actually literally stopped their lives to wait for the light. Now, maybe you can understand a bit more then about the rooster crowing at 11:30 and 1:30 a.m. and right before dawn, see? Those three different sets of crowings became a way to tell time when there was no clocks. So, Christian church does a lot of things differently than the rest of the world. And telling time, that's one of the things we do different. For example, may surprise you, but today is the first Sunday of the new year. Today. Our children right now are in godly play, transitioning from the green growing season into the 4 weeks of Advent, which is purple, to help get ready for the mystery of Christmas. In the church, Advent is the beginning of our Christian year. And today is New Year's Day. And that's kind of odd. I think it's odd. You don't have to think it's odd, but I think it's kind of odd. Because we all know January 1 is when we have the big festive parties and everybody makes their changes and all of that. But here we are marking the new year, walking towards together and waiting for Jesus' birth. And one of the ways we talk about that is to say that God's light is going to come into the world and that in Jesus there is no darkness at all. And I understand why we do this and why we mark time this way and talk about it this way, but I also want to say it's probably hurt us a lot more than we've ever realized. Because at the theological level, when you're talking about God, that kind of language creates all sorts of problems. It divides every day into two, pitting the light part against the dark part. It tucks all the sinister stuff into the dark part, right? And it identifies God with the sunny part. It leaves you to deal with the rest of that thinking all on your own. It implies things. It really implies things about dark-skinned people and sight-impaired people that are just frankly not true. And worst of all, I think it offers people of faith a giant closet in which we can store everything that threatens or scares us or frightens us so that we don't have to think too much about it. It's what we do at night in our bedrooms, right? How many of us grow up afraid of what's in the closet or under our beds? It's dark there. It says in that way that darkness and dark are bad. Well, we enter Advent at the precise time of year, naturally, in which the days are getting darker, not lighter. So you see a problem there? There's a problem there. Because the truth is, we absolutely 100% count on the dark. We need it. In the dark is where seeds begin to sprout and grow, right? All of this happens, that seed sprouting, in a place we can't see. Ask any expectant mom if she wants her baby to come early, and she will say, "No, I do not." As uncomfortable as we are, swollen ankles, back breaking, feeling horrific, it's nothing compared to a baby that comes fully formed. Thank you. We will wait. We will wait for the heart and lungs and kidneys to be ready to make the transition into the light when they go from fluid to air, right? We'll wait. We trust the dusky dark of the womb, where the baby is growing like a seed in the dark. It's about timing. And timing is everything. It's all about the timing. And this passage in Mark is written from a time, an eschatological time and view of history. In other words, it reflects a time in history when people believed that life as they knew it was hurtling, Matt talked about this last week, hurtling towards its divinely appointed end. But that end was going to be a new beginning. It's kind of easy to understand that when you think about a baby being born. We heard him read it. In those days, after that suffering, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, and the stars will be falling from heaven, and the powers in the heavens will be shaken. And then they will see the Son of Man coming in clouds with great power and glory. And then he will send out the angels and gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of heaven. Darkness was coming at them. But if you think of that darkness as the darkness of a womb, is it really something to be afraid of? Might we be able to anticipate that darkness with joy? With joy. Well, that's what we're going to try to do this Advent. Each week we will light a candle to mark our progress. And that's going to be our clock in this room. And tonight especially, we will sit in as dimly lit of a room as I can possibly get it. With candles everywhere. And listen, to music and pray for God's advent here. Because you see, we're situated right in between, smack in the middle of two advents. The advent, which simply means coming, a special coming. The advent that was long ago in Bethlehem, and the advent that is yet to be for each one of us. And during Advent, the church is preparing for this coming of Jesus. And it's in the season of active and anticipating, waiting for God's incarnation that we realize that this coming is a helpless baby. And while we wait, Jesus is urging us through this passage to be watchful. And that's the language you heard Matt read for us in Mark 13. And the invitation is to root our lives in grace and grow in faith in every way we can so that we'll be able to even recognize the birth of God in our midst so that we are ready. Because the truth is, most of us think we have all the time in the world, right? Which is why I'm trying to talk to you now about that cock crowing. Jesus was urging Peter and the others to be vigilant and watchful and to live every moment as though it could be their last. And along the way, Jesus said that for all anyone knew, a moment of apocalyptic unveiling could happen when a rooster crows at 1:30 in the morning. He's trying to say, you know, when it is any time. And maybe, just maybe, Peter and the others heard Jesus say that, and just maybe Peter and the others did what we all do. We hear those kinds of dramatic warnings. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he figures, if such a thing is ever really going to happen, he has all the time in the world. It'll be a long way off in the future. Maybe so long that he won't ever be around anymore when the end finally comes. So, you know, what's the deal, Jesus? What's the deal? But then, wham! Within 48 hours of Jesus saying that to Peter, a cock crowed at 1:30 in the morning, and the full truth of Jesus came crashing down around Peter's ears. Because in that moment, Peter realized he doesn't need to actually live till the end of the age. Because in that moment, for him, with the cry of the rooster, came his apocalypse, because he denied Jesus three times. I don't know him, I don't know him, I don't know him. And he came face to face with God. And as he came to see in the full darkness of 1:30 in the morning, God was right there, smack. So the writer of Mark's gospel just might have that moment of Peter's denial in mind when he says, "Therefore, keep awake, for you do not know when the master of the house will come in the evening or at midnight or at cock crow or at dawn, or else he may find you asleep when he comes suddenly. And what I say to you, I say to all, just keep awake." When's the rooster going to crow for you? When does the rooster crow in your life? When do you see fully in the dark? Maybe in your dreams when you sit bolt upright in bed in the dark of night. The dream that seems so more vivid than some things that actually happen to us. You know, when you wake up and your heart is pounding and you're full of sweat. The dream that is so startling, it makes you reassess the whole direction of your life. Maybe it's a cell phone call or a text that you get from someone that loves you that clearly lets you know that you are not walking the path that takes you toward health and wholeness in your life. Maybe it's after graduation when it's time to enter the workforce. And you can't find a job. Maybe it's a sudden job loss when you've worked diligently in your field forever. Maybe it's the wonderful birth of your child. Maybe it's when you lose someone very close to you when death comes calling. Maybe it's when you sing "Open Up" or "I Am Set Free." Maybe it's when you sit in a pew in church and know that God loves you and there is not a single thing you can do about it. Or maybe your life's rooster crow was like the moment with Fred Craddock, when you limply went along to get along. And then afterwards you feel terrible that you couldn't find within yourself a little bit of resolve already to stand up for what you already know is right. Maybe the rooster crows through the voice of the stranger that you're sitting next to at Shady Lady, who asks you about your Christian faith, but you find you don't have much to say, even though you go to church almost every week. I know y'all go to Shady Lady because I see you there because I go. We're all there and we're here. But somebody asked you about that and suddenly we can't find the words to say out loud. I go to church and I follow Jesus and it's transformed the way I make choices and spend my money. Maybe the rooster crows when a serious-voiced physician calls on the phone and says, "I have some news for you and I need you to come in and talk to me in person about that." Suddenly, all of life becomes ever so finite and closed in. See, the rooster crows and we face these ultimate moments of revelation and God breaks through, unveiling our eyes, and then we can see fully in the dark. And something happens or someone speaks and we wonder how close we really are to God anyway. And how serious are we about this whole faith thing? And we realize and feel, maybe for the first time or maybe for the thousandth, if you're like me and old, because it happens not just once, over and over again, that God really is just on the other side of the door. God really is just that close, sooner than we ever expect. Right here, already, not yet, almost. Seeing the dark and light is hard work. And in just a minute, Matt's going to do something that lots of parents do. Mine did it a lot. Especially when we lived in the valley and we were outside playing. Something that maybe happened to you a lot. Parent comes out. "It's getting dark. It's getting dark, Linda Susan. Time to come in. It's time for supper." He's going to call all of us to the table. Because in this Advent season, this call to the table serves as an invitation to assess who we really are and what we really love and where our deepest passion and desire really lives in us. And when we break bread together, we're saying that the gospel of Jesus and his living presence in our souls feeds our deepest need, and that's the food we need. And as we look back at our life and look forward to where we're headed, our hope is that we will open our eyes to this moment in time right now. And let us not fear the long hours of darkness, because darkness does not come from a different place than light. It's not presided over by a different God. The long nights of Advent and the early dawn of Easter both point us towards God, for whom darkness and light are just alike. Fertile seasons, that's what they are. For all of us who walk by faith, even in the dark. And as we heard from Fred Craddock, when you are sitting in the diner and you know what really needs to be said, but you don't find the words or the courage, still there might be a seed that is sprouting and growing within you, mysteriously out of our sight. Because what we want you to know is that Fred Craddock went on to be one of the greatest preachers in the United States. Fred Craddock's sermons are responsible. His ultimate witness to faith in Jesus Christ has been persuasive to tens of thousands of people. While God in this way goes on giving birth, that's how God works. In the dark and the light, birthing truly human beings in Christ and in all of us.
And you came down, freely you gave us your love. Showing us how. Make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me